Yes, Your Honor, I'm here. This is Kathleen Martin.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Yes, Your Honor, S.D. Smith, Stephen Smith for Mr. Stump.
Very well. We're ready to proceed when you are, and do you wish to reserve any rebuttal time, Mr. Smith?
Yes, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, sir, 3 minutes. Very well, you may proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court, Mr. Stump is addicted to narcotics and had requested treatment, which was part of his deferred disposition pursuant to 18.2-251. While he was on bond for the charge of possession of narcotics, he was later charged with burglary, which also is related to his problem that he has with narcotics. At the time he received the deferred disposition pursuant to 18.2-251, the Commonwealth was aware of the pending charges that he had regarding burglary, because indeed they actually occurred in the same jurisdiction in Montgomery County.
Well, this is Judge Huff. Everyone was aware of the pending charges at the time that the plea deal was reached, correct?
That is correct, yes, Your Honor.
And so the defendant would have had to realize at that time, at the time of entering the plea arrangement, that he may not be able to comply with the terms of the order that he was agreeing to. Is that right?
That's incorrect, Your Honor. The agreement called for him to enter into a treatment program, and he was under the impression that he would be able to enter that program. And there's nothing to say that he couldn't, even now. In other words, 18.2, pardon me?
Even though he was incarcerated at the time and knew that he had charges pending against him on another charge.
He knew that he had charges pending against him, but 18.2-251 itself contemplates that a person may receive treatment and in a substance abuse assessment while they're incarcerated. The fact that he was incarcerated doesn't mean that he could not have complied with the terms of his probation under 251, which require a substance abuse assessment and also treatment.
Then why didn't he?
It wasn't available to him. It was not made available to him. As a matter of fact, less than 2 months into his probation, he was charged with violating the terms of his probation, even though he still had 10 months left on that probation. The reason why he did not comply with his requirements is that he did not have an opportunity to enter into a substance abuse treatment program, nor was even an assessment done with him, on him.
Was there any this is Judge Petty, was there any motion made to withdraw his guilty plea as a result of the alleged violation of the plea agreement?
Well, he made a motion for reconsideration based on the fact that he had received a 3-year active sentence, which was...
But did he move to withdraw his guilty plea, which seems to me may be the proper remedy if the Commonwealth has violated the terms of a plea agreement?
I'd have to check again his motion for reconsideration, but the basic concern that he had was that he was not allowed to comply with the terms of his probation, and that was the substance of his motion for reconsideration, was that he be allowed to address that issue.
Was there any, this is Judge Petty again, was there any promise or guarantee made by the trial court that the charges would be dismissed at the conclusion of this probation period, or that he would not be sentenced to an active penitentiary sentence at the conclusion?
Yes, in the sense that he was sentenced under 18.2-251.
But
so the trial court did say, yes.
Does that statute mandate that the charges be dismissed at the conclusion, or does it simply say maybe?
It's my understanding that it does mandate that they be dismissed, because once the accused successfully completes the requirements, then the statute itself provides for dismissal. And also it's important to keep in mind that the statute, again, does contemplate that a person would be incarcerated, which is why it specifically states that a similar program can be made available through the Department of Corrections. And if you look at that in context as well of 18.2-251.01, interestingly enough, anyone convicted of a felony is required to also undergo a substance abuse assessment and also a treatment if it's available.
I stand corrected. It does say shall discharge and dismiss.
And so Mr. Stump is just, he needs treatment. That's what he's requesting. And that's the issue here, is that not only did the Commonwealth and the court convict him of a violation of probation, you know, less than 2 months into his probationary period of 1 year, it also didn't give him the opportunity to enter into a substance abuse treatment program. And because plea agreements are reviewed under the principles of contract law with important additional considerations of constitutional rights, the fact that Mr. Stump was not given the opportunity to complete a drug treatment program because he was incarcerated is an additional factor which should lead to this case being remanded to the circuit court for consideration.
That's one additional question, Judge Petty. The statute mandates a certain number of community service hours. I think it's 100 for a felony. How did he plan, at the time he knew he was incarcerated, correct? The time he entered into the plea agreement?
He was incarcerated the time he entered the plea agreement.
How did he plan to fulfill 100 hours of community service if he was incarcerated?
Well, community service could be service while he's being incarcerated. I mean, they do have work programs while people are incarcerated that could have been arranged or some sort of equivalent. So even the fact that he had community service obligations, that doesn't mean that he could not have complied with that program. He just would have needed the court to make that available to him. And again, the important point to keep in mind is that the Department of Corrections is specifically stated within this statute and the other statute, which contemplates that a person who receives such a deferred disposition may actually be incarcerated at the time of receiving treatment under 18. In sum, Mr. Stump is requesting that he be allowed to enter into a treatment program to address the underlying substance abuse issues that he faces. And when I reviewed the evolution of the statute, again, it's designed to help address not only the issue of the violation, but the underlying causes as well. And it was later on in, I believe it was in the 1980s, where it became mandatory that you have substance abuse treatment as a condition of the deferred disposition statute. So unless the court has any further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my argument for rebuttal.
All right, very well. You have 6 minutes remaining, sir. Ms. Martin?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court, this is Kathleen Martin for the Commonwealth. The Commonwealth asks that this conviction be affirmed because the trial court did not err in its ruling of finding that the defendant had violated the terms of the probation that would have entitled him to deferred disposition, and therefore the court was correct in finding him guilty of the original drug offenses and imposing sentence on those.
Judge Petty, this was the same Commonwealth Attorney's Office involved in both the burglary and the drug prosecution, was it not?
Yes, sir. As far as I know, yeah.
it seems to me that if something like this were done by a merchant, we'd refer to it as bait and switch. Why didn't they effectively sandbag the defendant by getting him to plead guilty, knowing full well that he couldn't fulfill the terms of the agreement, or that they weren't going to let him fulfill the terms of the agreement?
Well, I think, Your Honor, that would be a better argument if the defendant himself had not also known that he was in jail and that he was facing several other serious felony charges. If this were a case where the Commonwealth got him to agree to something in the plea agreement and then later said, oh, well, by the way, we found out you did all this other stuff, and so now we're going to prosecute you for that, too. I think
well,
that's a different scenario.
They have drug treatment programs in the Department of Corrections, do they not?
Yes, they do, and if it were only the drug treatment, I mean, certainly under the statute 18.2251, it does make reference to treatment programs in the Department of Corrections. But as was pointed out a little earlier, he was also required to do community service.
I see guys in striped jumpsuits all the time picking up trash along the highway. Isn't that a form of community service that's completed while you're incarcerated?
I'm not exactly sure about that, Your Honor. I mean, I think of community service as maybe something else, as opposed to you're not doing it while you're incarcerated. But in any event, the New River Valley ASAP program tried to schedule him for intake, and they sent him a letter, and they found out from his mother that he would be in jail for 2 or 3 years, and it wasn't even, you know, the defendant didn't really make an effort to contact them himself. But so when they found out that he was going to be in jail, you know, that's when they went back and said to the trial court, you know, we think that he is in violation here. And it's not really clear from the record that's been developed in this particular case, but, I mean, he did have more than just a burglary charge. There's a reference on page 64 to several other offenses, including grand larceny and burglary. And so there was more than just one other charge. And the defendant knew about this charge when he entered into the plea agreement. He could perhaps have made some provision in the plea agreement for these other charges in terms of, you know, depending on how I get sentenced in these other things, then maybe I can, you know, get an extension of time or just, you know, whatever they might have tried to have put into the agreement. But he didn't do anything of that. And on page 62 of the appendix, defense counsel had said, well, that when they talked about the plea agreement, they had not anticipated that he was going to get a lengthy sentence on the other charges. So in other words, the defendant was trying to sort of manipulate the system to his advantage by getting the benefit of deferred disposition and just hoping that this other stuff would somehow not get in the way. So it's not a situation where, as the trial court said, you know, he was in jail by his own fault. He didn't accidentally go there. It wasn't operation of law. It was not a situation where the circumstances were totally beyond his control and something happened, you know, after he entered the plea agreement, after he had started the New River Valley ASAP program, and then something happened and he couldn't complete it, as it was in the Payton case, where the defendant had health reasons after he'd started this detention program and wasn't able to comply. And so, you know, that's a totally different kind of situation than what the defendant had here when he knew, when he entered the plea agreement, that there were going to be difficulties in carrying that out. And certainly it's not reasonable to expect that he's going to serve his 2 or 3 years on these other charges and then be allowed to do whatever he has to do to get the deferred disposition. So it's the contract law that the defendant had cited in his brief where he sort of misread that, because it's non-performance excused only if the party can't comply and it's beyond his circumstances, and he is not without fault. And the defendant is not in that position. So that's a totally different kind of case here. You know, certainly the Commonwealth did not sandbag him. He knew about these things. He could have made some sort of provision for that. The fact that he's a drug addict might have something to do with mitigating his sentence, but it does not excuse his conduct. It doesn't excuse him of having committed the original drug crime. The Robinson case that I believe the defendant cited, the defendant there was arrested for narcotics because he had needle marks on his arms, and he said he used drugs, but he wasn't using anything at that particular moment. So the Supreme Court said, well, you couldn't punish somebody for mere status. But then 6 years later in Powell versus Texas, where the defendant was an alcoholic and he was drunk in public, the court said, well, that's conduct. You can punish for conduct. And so certainly here, even though the defendant may have a drug problem, and that may be the reason for all of his crimes, the conduct that he is being punished for is that he was possessing drugs. And so he's not excused simply because he has a drug problem. He knew, as I've said repeatedly, he knew about these things. He tried to take advantage of the system. And so certainly we believe that the trial court was correct in its ruling of finding that the deferred disposition no longer applied and in sentencing him on the original charges. If there are no other questions, we would ask that the court affirm.
Very well. Thank you, Ms. Martin. Hearing no other questions, Mr. Smith, you have 6 minutes remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor. Far from trying to manipulate the system, Mr. Stump showed up at the deferred disposition hearing in a jumpsuit, in an orange jumpsuit. It was obvious that he was incarcerated. The Commonwealth had the record before them. And again, it was the same jurisdiction in which both charges were being heard. Also, and this was not an assignment of error that was accepted by the court, but one of the assignments of error that Mr. Stump brought was the fact that his subsequent conviction for the burglary was also included in his sentencing guidelines, which called for a maximum of 6 months. The trial court deviated and requested ordered an active sentence of 3 years. So realistically, both the Commonwealth and Mr. Stump, based on the sentencing guidelines, had reason to believe that he may have been able to complete the terms of his deferred disposition upon release from the from his sentence. Now, regarding a fault, again, the issue here isn't the burglary, but it's the availability of the substance abuse treatment. I mean, that's what's at issue, and it is the Commonwealth that has not provided him the ability to address his addiction concerns in prison. And this is a very substantial issue given the numbers of people that are in prison, the fact that a large percentage of them have underlying drug treatment issues. And I have real concerns as to whether or not these inmates are getting the treatment that they do need. Now, the issue of the Robinson case in California regarding addiction, it was actually cited in a very interesting report that led to the establishment of the mandatory treatment programs under 251, which is a 1996 final report of the Virginia State Crime Commission, first-time drug offender statute, 18.2-251, which was the document that the House relied on in making changes. And the basic issue that they were bringing there is, again, the fact that whether it's direct offenses related in resulting in drug convictions or resulting in other issues in society, that there really needs to be an emphasis on good quality treatment, availability of good quality treatment programs for these offenders. And again, 251 does contemplate that a person may be incarcerated when they receive treatment. And 18.2-251.01, even though it's not directly at issue, also reflects the policy that substance abuse treatment programs need to be available to people who are incarcerated. And also, the fact that a substance abuse assessment wasn't done is another problem. I mean, even though Mr. Stump was incarcerated Again, the Commonwealth knew that. The Virginia Alcohol Safety Action Program was aware of that as well. There could have been some provision made that at least an assessment could have been done for Mr. Stump, as is often done for people who are awaiting bail hearings or as condition of bail or bond. So, again, Mr. Stump is just requesting the opportunity to address some of the addiction issues that he faces. If the court has any more questions, I'm available for the balance of my time.
Hearing none, it sounds like that's it. We thank you very much for your